So one of the biggest things that happened in the beginning of this year is we saw the advancement of two state court cases that would really, really curtail mail voting in key swing states.
Welcome back. With the midterms now coming into view, the battle over election rules is heating up in many parts of the country.
In Pennsylvania and in Wisconsin.
New questions for the future of the state's absentee ballot drop boxes.
This puts Pennsylvania's voting process into flux ahead of some major primary elections for governor, U.S. Senate, and other offices.
I'm Annie Reese. This is Politico Dispatch, and today...
My name is Zach Montalero. I'm a state politics reporter here at Politico who covers voting rights and democracy and elections.
Zach Montalero on two consequential voting cases in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, the latter of which is the biggest case up in the air right now, because 2.6 million people voted by mail in Pennsylvania in 2020.
It's really the scope of it that's interesting, is that like... We've seen a lot about Georgia, we've seen a lot about Texas, but this would far and away be the biggest shift in how Americans vote. And I think if you ask most people in Pennsylvania right now, mail voting will be around in 2022 because the Supreme Court there is generally liberal. Democrats have generally a majority on there. But it would be easily the biggest kind of bite out of voter access that we've seen. You know, since the 2020 election, we've seen, and I've written a lot about the laws that you saw in Texas and Georgia and naming all these states that have made it more onerous for people to vote. That is definitely true. These laws have made it more difficult for people to vote. They've added, you know, certain hurdles that people need to clear. There has not been a dramatic wholesale change like this would be. This would be totally eliminating the ability for most Pennsylvanians to vote via the mail. Absentee voting would still exist in the state, which would be kind of a small select group of Pennsylvanians would be allowed to do it. Military members, folks who are ill, long-term illness, things like that. But most Pennsylvanians would not be allowed to vote via the mail. And that would be quite a dramatic sea change there.
Yeah.
You know, it's the law has changed there a lot in Pennsylvania. And Act 77, which authorized mail voting in the first place, that was only signed in 2019. So it'd be a lot of seesawing back and forth in the state. If this court case goes the way that the litigants want it to, what Act 77 did is make no excuse mail voting available to any Pennsylvanian who want to take advantage of it.
What's no excuse mail voting?
No excuse mail voting means anybody could choose to vote via the mail if they would like. It does not require that you vote via the mail, but it means that you don't need to have a particular excuse to do it. In some states, you have to have a legal excuse to vote via the mail. Typically, that means being in the military, being out of the county on election day, being sick. Very strict categories for who can and cannot vote via the mail. Most states have what's called no excuse mail or no excuse absentee voting, meaning that anyone could choose to vote via the mail. They could just request their ballot and they could do it because they want to, not because they're going to be gone.
So we're still waiting on a decision out of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to do with mail voting, but we did see a decision out of Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, we saw at least a preliminary decision in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, the case is a little bit narrower, but not by much. The Wisconsin case is looking also from a group of conservatives. It's looking to block drop boxes. And what drop boxes are is that if you voted via the mail, you're probably familiar with them, is that if you don't want to return your ballot by the mail, like actually by the USPS, for whatever reason, you can drop it in a box, exactly what it sounds like, drop boxes, that are run by election officials. This is not just a random box on the sidewalk. This is something from your county clerk, your county board of elections, what have you. The Wisconsin case is looking to ban them. The conservatives are arguing that they aren't allowed for in state law, and that the guidance that the state election commission issued allowing for them was unconstitutional in the state. We haven't gotten a final ruling there yet, but what we did get is that the state Supreme Court said that at least for the upcoming spring election, and Wisconsin has a whole bunch of elections at all points in time, this is for a lot of local positions, for the upcoming spring election, at least right now as it stands, drop boxes can't be used.
And why do we see this happening in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin?
Well, for kind of a litany of reasons. One is that Republicans have targeted mail voting since and before the 2020 election. Act 77 in Pennsylvania was passed with overwhelming bipartisan support at the time in 2019. But the big X factor, of course, is former President Trump has spent the better part of his post-presidency and in the lead up to the 2020 election attacking mail voting. As part of his effort to kind of spread lies about the 2020 election, he's kind of really honed in specifically on mail voting, kind of with a bunch of conspiracy theories about it. So we've kind of seen a broad Republican attack on mail voting. You know, not everybody involved in these cases. In fact, the attorneys specifically involved with these cases say this isn't about fraud. It's about following the state law. That being said, Republicans broadly have looked to kind of shave away at mail voting where they can. In Pennsylvania, this wouldn't be shaving away. It'd be more or less getting rid of it entirely. But that's just been the kind of the theme since Trump lost the election. And the reason we see this going through litigation as opposed to legislation is that in both of those states, there's Democratic governors. There right. is not a universe that Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf, a Democrat, would sign revoking mail voting. Doesn't exist. That universe, frankly, doesn't exist. You know, mm-hmm. in Wisconsin, there is Democratic Governor Tony Evers, and he would not sign a law explicitly banning drop boxes. He just wouldn't do it, almost assuredly. So for the Republicans who want to attack mail voting, which really before the 2020 election was fairly used in a bipartisan fashion, and if anything, Republicans are a little bit better at it, in these states at least, their only really path right now at the current moment is through the courts.
So speaking to the patchwork thing that you were talking about with these states and voting rights laws, we know that national voting rights legislation is a major priority for Democrats in Congress, but they have not been able to pass it, which means more of these different voting laws in each state to follow.
Yeah, so I mean, that's where we're at right now, that there won't be any federal election legislation passed, at least the scope that Democrats wanted because of the filibuster. Without relitigating the past year and a half of everyone's lives, Democrats wanted to pass a pretty extensive voting rights bill. At the end, all 50 Democrats agreed to it, but because members of the Democratic caucus would not get rid of the filibuster, and there wasn't 10 Republicans vote for this, we have that piecemeal system, which is how it's been for a while. So it really depends state to state. You know, it's going to always change and vary state to state. Election laws in this country have been piecemeal for a while, and they'll continue to be that way, from everything from early voting to if your state offers early voting at all, to how many days your state offers early voting, to, you know, when it happens. Georgia, for example, has pretty accessible early voting. They have a lot of early voting, in-person early voting. Mm-hmm. Mail voting. Can people choose to vote via the mail? My home state of New York. Right now, most New Yorkers cannot choose to vote via the mail. Can't do it. Mm. There was some carve-outs for the coronavirus pandemic, but presumably, knock on wood, 2022, we won't be in a situation that we're still considered in a mass pandemic situation. As the law stands right now, most New Yorkers can't vote via the mail. You know, so where we're at right now is going to be really left up state to state. And there's not going to be one singular litigation or legislation strategy, because what may be deemed unconstitutional in one state is totally constitutional in the other, and vice versa.
What are a couple of other major voting rights issues that you're following right now? I was really interested in a recent story by you about how the number of states restoring voting rights to former felons has increased by, I think, 50% since 2018.
Yeah, that's another thing I've been following is former felon reenfranchisement efforts. In most states at this point, actually, once folks are released from prison, if they're convicted of a felony and released from prison, then they can vote. But this is also something that varies state to state to state to state. There are some states that have laws on the books that if you're convicted of a felony, you can vote never. There's no state that practically does that because of executive orders, but there's some states that the law on the books is that convicted of a felony, you lose your right to vote forever and ever. There's a couple of states at the totally opposite end of that spectrum that even while imprisoned, you can still vote. And most states fall kind of in between that range. What we've seen recently is that there's been a kind of a big push for states to move to at least to the level of that once you are released from prison, even if you're on parole, even if you have other terms of your sentence, once you are released from prison, once you are no longer incarcerated, people regain the right to vote automatically. There's been a big, big shift. Since 2018, really, was the big shift, was when a ballot initiative in Florida passed that kind of really energized activists in this direction. This year, we're going to see more fights on that. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest ones is Virginia, which as it currently stands, it looks like that won't pass in Virginia, and in New Mexico, which is also kind of up in the air through the end of this week. But what makes this kind of interesting is that unlike a lot of kind of election laws where you could pretty well guess, and not universally, but pretty well guess what side people come down on, depending on their political party, mm-hmm. former felon reenfranchisement efforts does have kind of a cross current and support on both sides of the aisle. To be clear, majority of the support comes from Democrats. Democrats just generally support expanding the voting base, and that's in line with this. But there is a significant number of Republicans, significant number of conservative lawmakers who also, especially once post-incarceration, kind of support this as well. And that's a rarity right now.
So where do things go from here, Zach? What are you watching?
Yeah, I think the big thing is that I'm going to be looking at is how do the laws that we saw passed in 2021 kind of affect elections? These laws definitely make it more onerous, but like, how does it drastically change turnout, or does it drastically change turnout? By and large, most political scientists believe that set aside the normative value of how easy or how hard it should be to vote, that it's really hard to change election laws that will show a substantive, significant impact on turnout.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that these laws, that's not a judgment on the normative value of these laws, but that's political scientists generally have found that, you know, it's hard, really hard to make dramatic shifts in turnout. But does it make it easier? And does it happen on the margins? And, you know, I think a good example was what we're seeing in Texas right now. After they passed their law, there's been a lot of stories about how clerks and election officials there are kind of struggling with the new Texas law, especially with regards of who can mail vote. How can they, you know, can they send out parts of the application to people? Can they help correct it? Texas has been a great example of how these laws make it more challenging for people to vote. And then what's the ultimate effect of that? And, you know, as we see the implication elsewhere of other laws, kind of how does that go into effect as well? And also, some states are still going to have legislative sessions this year. It's, you know, if you have a full-time legislature, new laws could come as well. And we could be going the other direction as well. I'm watching New Mexico, which is trying to pass a state voting rights act after the federal efforts failed. Generally, northeastern states are catching up to the rest of the country with mail voting, with access to mail voting, that by and large, a lot of the states that didn't have universal or didn't have access to mail voting for anyone who wanted to do it were in the Northeast, even despite the fact that they're deep blue states. Typically, a lot of those states just haven't had that expansion. How does it continue to progress the way it has there as it has elsewhere?
Voting laws and the way voting is applied is an issue that's gotten really tangled up in misinformation. I mean, obviously, we've seen Donald Trump, who's run on the idea of a stolen election and voting machines or people that don't count votes. These lawsuits we've been talking about are not Trump lawsuits, but could you speak to this moment? I mean, you said that mail-in voting previous to 2020 was actually very bipartisan.
Yeah, I mean, it's really like a two-part equation, right? There's how people input their votes, for lack of a better way to say it. How are voters allowed to access the ballot box, and how are they counted? You know, the second part especially, I think there is a lot of concern. That was the weak point that Trump and his allies tried to target was... Really, it was less so on the inputting side, but of course there were lawsuits there. It was the output. It was
how are they counted?
How are the results counted? How are they certified? Things like that. We're in a tenuous point for American democracy on both sides of that equation. How people have access to the ballot, is there, you know, relatively equal access to the ballot across the country? The answer to that is an obvious no. But how are the results outputted, right? Is everything counted fairly? Are people certifying elections? Are people spreading mis and disinformation about the elections? The answer to that last question is obviously yes. We're in a maelstrom of mis and disinformation. It feels like that every week there's a new conspiracy theory popping up, you know? So it's a tenuous point for the American democratic system and trust in the American democratic system.
Zach Montalaro, thank you so much for talking with me.
On that bleak note, Annie, thanks for having me.
Also today, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has invoked powerful legislative authority, the never-used-before Emergencies Act, to crack down on trucker protests that are blockading border crossings and bringing downtown Ottawa to a standstill. The Emergency Act grants the government extraordinary powers for 30 days, including the power to prohibit public assembly, travel, and the use of specific property. And a federal judge announced Monday afternoon that he would dismiss former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin's defamation lawsuit against the New York Times. The case centered on a June 2017 Times editorial that Palin's attorneys argued accused her of inciting murder 6 years earlier in a mass shooting in Tucson, Arizona. Palin is expected to appeal the decision. Today's episode of Politico Dispatch included music composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Be sure to follow Politico Dispatch if you haven't yet, and if you can, leave us a rating and review. It helps more people find the show. I'm Annie Reese. Thanks so much for listening.